It's the Red Tag sales event at Jeff Weiler Chevrolet of Columbus. Look for the red tags and unlock unbeatable discounts on new and pre-owned Chevys. 0% APR on select new Chevrolet for well-qualified buyers. From the rugged Silverado to the sleek Malibu, every tag means savings. Financing made easy. We'll pay off your trade no matter what you owe. Stop by Jeff Weiler Chevrolet on Gender Road or shop anytime at jeffweilercolumbus.com. That's jeffweilercolumbus.com.
Today on The Grave Talks, part two of Inside the Savannah Paranormal Museum, a conversation with owner Chris Soucy. I was watching one of your videos and you were talking about you have a jack-in-the-box there. It's really creepy looking.
It is truly a creepy looking thing, and it has a creepy history.
Because you say in the video, you kind of go, you're talking about the jack-in-the-box that regularly threatens to kill us. I'm like, what? So can you share the story of this jack-in-the-box?
Absolutely. And it's a fascinating jack-in-the-box. Just don't look at it. You know, there's something very unique about it. It came to us by way of another paranormal museum. And this box, it is from the 1800s. And it is not a wind-up jack-in-the-box. It has this industrial spring in it, right? And this industrial spring is like from, like, I would imagine, you know, the treads of a car or the interior of some heavy machinery. Because in order to get the head back in the box, you have to fight. You have to fight to put it in. And then there's just a small little latch on the top. And when you open the latch, the head comes popping out with such ferocity that the entire box leaps up into the air. And that is enough. It's an anxiety-provoking
toy.
Exactly. Right?
I get that.
We invited our friend Brian Byers, who is a member of, he owns Savannah Psychics. And Brian Byers and Jen Byers, they are this duo of psychics that we've learned to trust implicitly. They've come through for us time and time again with such good information. We invited them onto our podcast to do an example of automatic writing. Now, Brian did not have any idea of what was in the museum or what was going on. You know, he didn't have anything because we had brought a couple of items from the museum into the office, but they were not displayed. They were actually hidden. And he was sitting there and he started talking about how there's something in the room. And then he described it as a box. And he's like, there's something in the box. And so he's going through the whole thing. And we're quickly like determining that he's talking about the jack-in-the-box. He's like, yeah, it's almost vibrating with power. And he's giving us like kind of this lay down that there's like, it's evil at its source, but there's something weird going on with it. And so I pull it out, I put it down. And he, even before he said that, he said, there's a piece of a ship in it. He said, there's a piece of a ship in it. And I was like, I wonder if the spring came from a ship. It very likely could have.
Yeah.
And of the things that we know about it was that it is likely German, right? So that's kind of the thing. So I bring it out, I pop it open, we have a laugh and we're talking about it. And I start to, you know, do the little routine where I'm closing it back up. And as I'm closing it back up, Brian says, Othnan. And I was like, excuse me? He's like, Othnan. I'm just getting that word, Othnan. Maybe orphan, but it sounds like Othnan. It sounds like they're saying Othnan. And so I'm closing the box and I'm like, that's interesting. And in the back of my head, there's like, that's worth remembering. And so I put the box up and we're going through with an automatic writings, you know, where he uses a very loose movement with a pencil to write on a piece of paper. And he's communicating with spirits this way. And we start communicating with a spirit named Erin. And Erin identifies herself as a young girl. We're thinking that she's around 11 to 12. We didn't get a firm age. And we're like, oh gosh, are you attached to one of these items? And she says, yes. And it's like, what item? And she's like, box. We're like, oh, are you attached to the jack-in-the-box? She's like, yes. And she goes on to intimate that the box killed her, that she had died as a result of the box. And when we asked her how, she said she choked. She was choked. And we're like, okay. And again, we're just kind of like listening to it. And then comes the warning. She's like, she's attached to the box because she's trying to tell people, never close the box. Do not close the box. Because when the box is closed, it charges energy. It gets stronger. And you must always leave the box open. That's what was coming through in the automatic writing. And I was like, that's interesting because, you know, I guess the spring is coiled, right? So it's sitting there just kind of like vibrating with the tension of the spring. So it makes sense that that's the notion that it is, that when it's closed, it's building energy. And the longer it's closed, the more powerful it becomes, the more powerful the entity becomes. It's utilizing the kinetic energy of the spring to power its supernatural powers. And all that was very interesting. But my wife, Megan, was just off screen with her phone out, and she types in often, O-F-N-E-N. Often means open in German.
Oh, that's
while I was closing the box, Brian was hearing in his ear the word open in German. Aaron was German, it turns out. And the Jack in the Box was also German from the 1800s. And so when we have Spirit Box around it, and when we have the Spirit Chat around it, we have definitely gotten death threats from the box. We leave it open.
For me, that would be enough to say, I really don't want to be around this.
Right. Well, yeah, that's one of the big things is we try to learn all of the different entities or different objects. We try to learn what they are contained by, what contains their power, what keeps them from being dangerous. In the case of the Jack in the Box, it has to be opened. A lot of the items react to being encased in salt, having salt.
Oh,
put around.
I noticed that on a lot of the videos you had salt yes. around things.
Everything that we have salt around is something that we specifically personally had an experience with that we had to protect ourselves from.
And how do you protect yourself from the Jack in the Box? If it's open, is it okay? Or do you have salt and holy water and everything, the whole arsenal thrown at it?
So there are two things that happen. One is we leave the box open because apparently when it's open, all of its energy just floods out of it. It doesn't have, it can't keep its energy. And then it's inside of a glass box. Glass boxes are pretty renowned for containing spirits. If you can, put an object behind glass, oftentimes you're protected. We have yet to salt the Jack in the Box because it has not acted out. It's only spoken. And really, a lot of ghosts just talk a big game. we believed everything a ghost said, we would be out of business. So,
now, what kind of experiences have you had with this collection of objects?
So one of the most profound ones we had was with an object called the Kumin Thong. A Kumin Thong is a Thai, it means golden child. And for a long time, when women would have miscarriages or early infancy death, they would actually roast the body and then gild it in gold and then give it back to the parent. And it becomes kind of like this token. They have to take care of it. They have to put food offerings to it. They have to treat it really well because the life that was lost is still kind of stretching out from this, body. And if you treat it well, then the good fortune that was supposed to happen to the child will come to you. So it's an interesting grieving, practice. Still take care of the child that you lost, which kind of suggests that there is still, fortune to the experience of having the child, even if you lost it. So that's an interesting thing, but it's super dark. I mean, that's super dark. You're like, oh, this is a dead baby that you're giving
right.
me? So we got this Kumin Thong, and it is very disturbing looking. It's a very disturbing looking thing, but it was made after they had outlawed the practice of, roasting babies. But it looks like maybe a toddler-sized, skeletal, mummified thing. And it's an authentic Kumin Thong from Thailand, brought to the United States in the 50s. They say that there's like a cemetery ash, which I think means like cremated remains and dirt from the cemetery. And so it's a sculpture, but it's very disturbing to look at. And originally, it was going to go into the Paranormal History Room as a kind of a show of how superstitions and how people view the paranormal in different cultures. And this was a thing that they did for dead children to kind of honor their existence and keep them present. This thing is very odd. There's a lot of weird things about it. One of them is that it has this very long ponytail in the back, and it has like a big leather satchel on the ponytail. And you're like, what baby has a long ponytail? You know? And the more you look at it, the more you're just like, it just doesn't feel like a child. It looks like a mummified adult, but it's so small. When we got it, it stank. It smelled of rotting meat, it smelled like a dead animal. And wet mud. So it's like a dead animal in mud. So you get this scent and you're like, oh God, you know, we can't display this in the museum. This is, you know, terrible. One of the things that was very scary about this object was when it got to us, its foot, one of its feet had broken off and it had this terrible scent. And so we kind of like packed it back up as best we could and we locked it away in another room, because it was too intense, you know, and we're like, we might have to get rid of this. You know, we may have to bury it because it would make visitors sick to be near it. And so Brian Byers comes to visit the museum, and this is before we're open, everything's kind of closed off anyway. And he goes on to tell us that there's some frantic woman spirit running around the building. And she is very concerned, she's very upset. And he comes to tell us that she's foreign and that she says that she made something that's in the building, and she claims that it is a coffin. She has made a coffin. And so we have coffins and we're like, oh, is it this coffin? Is that? And he's like, no, no, no. She's saying it doesn't look like a coffin. She's saying it looks like a child. And I was like, ah. So, it, you know, instantly in my mind, I'm like, I know exactly what you're talking about, but I'm not telling him. I'm just letting him find the conclusions. And then he says, she's worried because it's a coffin for a demon, a child-killing demon. And she's worried because she says it's broken and the demon's getting out. And immediately, you know, chills down my spine because its foot had fallen off. And I'm like, oh my God. And I was like, is there something we could do? And then he's saying, she's showing me the roof of a house, like a grass roof of a house, but she's showing me this white plaster that they're putting on the roof. But she doesn't speak English. She's just showing me images. She's showing me pictures. I remembered that there was and I think it was Malaysian. It was an Asian superstition that there was a creature that had this long tongue. And it would come to the roof of these thatched houses and stick its tongue through the roof and into the belly of pregnant women and suck the baby out of them.
Oh, that's horrific.
Absolutely horrific.
That is horrific.
And she was basically saying that she had captured this demon that eats babies, that eats unborn babies, that, you know, this baby killer. I was like, I remember, according to custom and legend, that there was something they put in the paste of their mortar on the roof to keep the creature from being able to get through, to keep the tongue from coming through. But, you know, I'm not that up on the lore. So I end up calling around and I end up talking to a Thai monk, and I'm asking him, I'm like, hey, I know this is going to sound weird, but is there a special plaster that is blessed, that, you know, that is protective? And he says, oh yeah, you're talking about the 100-year sacred herb. Yes, I actually make medallions that protect, you know, your hearth, you know, these little medallions, these little Buddhist charms made of the 100-year sacred herb. And I was like, can you send that to me? You know, could I get one? Can I buy one?
Man, you called the right person.
Well, yeah. Well, and long story short, it was actually like the fifth or sixth person that I ended up talking to. But he sent it to me. And the moment I put it down in front of this cumin thong, the smell went away, like instantly. It was like gagging stench to nothing.
Wow.
And I was like, I have to believe that that means it's working. And I'll say, like, every once in a while, maybe once a month, we'll get the slightest scent of it, but then it's gone. And I'm like, I think it's still fighting to get out. But I think that, you know, that little amulet is doing its job.
Stories like that I find so fascinating because it all just sounds like legend and folklore.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you put that into practice And it's like, you had a problem with this thing really smelling. You get this, it's no longer smelling like it was. I find that fascinating.
Right. And that's just one of those things. And when people ask about like the protections we use, because we do have like lots of different cultures' protections. We have, things from Africa, from China, from Japan, from, you know, Western Christianity, from, you know, Native American. We've collected as many of the items that people believe are protective and put them in our museum. And they're not even all on display. A lot of them are hidden because we want to honor the fact that everyone's belief comes with it, this sincere hope of safety and the sincere hope that the light will prevail. And so I believe that it is that belief, not the item, but the belief in the item that gives it its significance. And we want to honor every possible avenue of protection that we can muster, because we believe that everyone's belief should be honored.
And you know, with that particular item, and you think, oh, the babies, and how could they do that? You know, I just got back from Spain, and I love to go to really old cathedrals. I'm not Catholic, but I was teasing my sister, and I said, this should be the, I can't believe we're not Catholic tour, but.
Well, they knew how to build a place of worship.
It's fascinating. Sure. It's fascinating. Yeah. But within the church, they all have somewhere in there these reliquaries. And so they have femur bones. In fact, one church we went into had Saint Ursula. She's just laid out. And so you think, ooh, that's morbid. But then you're like, the Catholic Church. I even went into one in Madrid where it had he's not a saint yet, John Paul II's blood. And so that's kind of historically something that's happened throughout time.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the fact that we got to this place, and I think it's the fallacy of science that they believe that telling us how things happen replaces why things happen. The how gives us all of these wonderful understandings of cell division and of, you know, the mechanics of nature. But they do not address why. Mm-hmm. And the why is where we have these reliquaries, and the why is where we have faith and churches and all these other things. The why is a question that we shouldn't leave to science, because science will tell us that it's mundane. Science will tell you childbirth is a natural process of biology, but we know it's a miracle. Mm-hmm. We know it. You know, there's no way you can downplay the absolute immense miracle of a human being showing up. You know, that is, but we treat it like it's commonplace. We've turned it into a process and not a miracle. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what happened with a lot of faiths too. They got to a place where it's like, well, if you can't prove it with science, we're going to just have to, you know, turn it into metaphor and allegory. And I think that does water down a faith. And I think that, you know, facing death used to be more about embracing those macabre and weird and dark things, because for people who shield themselves from it, they are not prepared when something traumatic happens, mm-hmm. because they have not been spending enough time associating themselves with, you know, the very inexplicable nature of the world.
Now, with your museum, I would guess that you have, in fact, I did see a video of someone dropping something off.
Yes.
Are you getting a lot of unsolicited objects?
We are. Well, you know, we do have the one, like, in the middle of the night, my curator, like, walked up to the door and saw this bag on the front steps. That is kind of rare. People reach out and they're like, I have this item, I have this object. We've had people from all over the country contact us and be like, I've got this thing and I don't know what to do with. And we're happy to take it. And we basically have this idea that as long as we can within reason deal with whatever's going on with the object, we'll display it. But if we can't, we will bury it. You know, we will put it up. We have an object that is right now on the chopping block. It's like, well, we may have to bury this object because we can't seem to contain the activity of this object.
What is the object?
So the object, it came to us from a woman who collects haunted objects. You know, she buys them on eBay and does these things. So it ultimately came from Japan. So it was this Japanese doll, a very strange, peculiar doll. But the woman almost immediately started saying that I am feeling like this entity wants to possess me. It's very forceful. It's very, you know, direct. It seems harmful. And I'm getting like scratches and bites, and I'm having this sensation that this entity really wants to possess me. And I think it may have done it once or twice. You know, there are some times when I just don't remember things. So we're getting these stories, and it's like, okay, yeah, you know, bring it to us. And it's a very innocuous doll. It doesn't exude any like dread. It's not one of those like, oh, ah, that's an obviously haunted doll, which is the worst. You know, when they're not particularly scary, you let your guard down around them. We have had two kind of large incidents where visitors, well, actually one was my producer of my podcast, another was a visitor, got struck really hard in their back, like painful, like stabbing strikes right between their shoulder blades. Both of them had it in the same place at different occasions. My producer literally ran from the building when it happened.
Do you have video of that? I think I saw a video of that.
It's on TikTok. Then it happened to a guest who came for a public ghost hunt, paranormal investigation in the building. He had the same thing happen, but he didn't run. He stayed. And over the course of the evening, his behavior became so erratic and so frightening that we were afraid that he had been possessed. And I ultimately had to perform kind of a rudimentary exorcism just to get him back to his senses. And it was very intense, to the point at which we actually canceled our investigation. We don't do public investigations anymore. Because it's one of those things where it's like, okay, we were prepared for almost everything, but something went wrong. We've missed something somewhere. And the more we kind of examined and looked at it, the behaviors and the processes all seemed to be the same as this woman who had complained about this doll. And the doll was actually closely present in both of those events. Because after my producer got hit, we moved the doll. And then this guest got hit. And when he got hit, he was actually directly antagonizing the doll.
Oh, that does not seem like a good idea.
Right. Well, you know, unfortunately, we have an entire generation of ghost investigators who learned that trying to instigate a spirit or provoke a spirit is the appropriate way to, to get some kind of interaction. And we are not that. We do not believe that even in a little. It's like, don't show up and provoke it. You know, it's better to have no evidence than to have evidence that was collected dishonestly.
And it can just open up some pretty negative experiences like this.
Oh, well, that's just it. It's like, if you're pushing negative energy, do you think you're going to get positive energy back? Then you get negative energy back. You know, it's open communication. It's trying to respond in a way that it thinks you will respond to. So if you're being provocative, it's going to respond in a way that it thinks you will continue to connect with it, right? Because I think that's what spirits really want. Spirits really want the living to pay attention to them. And so in a lot of cases, when you have a scary entity, it's probably because we pay so much attention to it, right? If it jumps up and we go, ah, that we're giving it that energy, that moment actually is very nourishing for the spirit because it is very focused attention that we've given it.
Now, when you and Megan and your staff, are you ever concerned? Because we talked about, you know, things attaching themselves. Do you have kind of a routine at the end of the day when you leave, or do you just lock the door and go, they just stay in there, they're all good? But I would think that your wife would have a little ritual she might do because she doesn't want those things in her house. So you certainly wouldn't want to bring it home with you at the end of the day.
Right. Yes. At the front door of the museum, we have three items. One is a meteorite iron dagger. The other is a selenite dagger. And the other is an iron cross. These objects are known to dispel spirits. If a spirit is holding on to you and you have iron on you, people believe that spirits just do not like iron. So if you touch iron or if you have iron, you can kind of get whatever grabs onto you off. And then the selenite is a focal. It focuses energy away from you. It goes in the direction that the dagger is pointing. So by touching it, you're also giving the spirit kind of an express ticket away from you. So we have those objects right at the front door so that everyone, you know, every guest that comes through are like, you know, whether you believe or not, please touch one of those items. You know,
that's a good idea.
Because we don't want to, ruin anyone's day with a haunting in the middle of the night.
It's like, you just went to the paranormal museum. You didn't think you'd be haunted forever afterwards, you know?
Right, exactly.
It's like
and we do our best to contain the spirits. We have wards. So the artifacts room has four strong wards, strong things from different cultures that kind of keep the spirits from like wandering away from that room.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely want it to be an experience that comes with as little risk as possible.
Yeah, buy some merch when you leave. Don't, don't take a spirit home with you. Take a t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. Grab a t-shirt. Yeah, we have a tote bag.
And you have some great merch. I would highly recommend that. So people can follow you on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok.
That is correct.
And then your podcast is the most haunted city on earth, and people can listen to that, I'm assuming,
and
wherever
you
listen.
We're at Haunted City Podcast on every, we're also on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, every platform that has podcasts. Most Haunted City on Earth, we just basically yak about ghostly things.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for taking so much time out of your day. I think it was a great conversation, and I just really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And that wraps up our conversation with Chris Soucy about the Savannah Paranormal Museum. For more information, visit their website at savannahparanormalmuseum.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, you can become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, we thank you very much for listening. Thank you.